Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
All right. Well, there's Mark talking about quarterbacks and the khaki pants stuff, and I was listening to my fellows in the morning. I love their show. Troy was raining on their parade today. Troy Rank in with me today, D-Mac. But Troy, you just rained on their parade this morning because you were being truthful, and they were asking you about quarterbacks, and you just said, if you can't get somebody, one of the top three guys, what are you even thinking? Would you care to expound on that? Common sense thought?
Well, they asked about, you know, getting a quarterback on day two, day three. And I just said that if you don't believe that player's appreciably better than Kevin Hogan, then why do it?
Why do it?
Because that pick at fourth, especially the fourth round, fifth, I guess you could argue, but fourth, that guy's going to play. He's going to be a backup. He's going to be on every special team. He's going to be a valuable asset, maybe even threat for a starting job.
Yeah, when I heard Mark too say, listen, I don't really care who you draft. Part of it is I know that Mark hates this. Mark is not a college football guy, and he says it all the time. And Mark thinks, you know, and then part of it, I think, is where you come from. I mean, Mark was literally a, you know, 10th round pick from nowhere, or more specifically, Nowhere, Alaska. And I believe Nowhere is about 30 minutes outside of Nome. And, you know, when Tom Nalen's on here, you know, he was pretty deep in the draft. And we had Nate Jackson here. He was, you know, he was an unsigned guy. And, you know, and I get it. I understand what you're saying. It makes perfect sense to me. The way they look at everything, Troy, is they're right. Like, we don't care where you get drafted. You know, either you can play or you can't play. Right?
Yeah, because they lived it.
But that being said, if you looked at things even a touch analytically, you'd see the success rate in all positions tends to be a little bit where you're drafted higher. Not all the time. Not that you can't succeed. And when it comes to the quarterback position, it's off the charts. I mean, it is preposterous how much better overall quarterbacks drafted higher, Troy, do than, you know, guys later in the draft. And then there's the other question. For example, the AAF is about to go under. It is actually a miracle the AAF got to, I guess, what will be their
week nine.
Yeah, and isn't it a 10-week season?
Right.
It almost folded before this weekend.
You know, the Carolina Hurricanes owner basically funded it after like week three.
That dude is ridiculous.
He's trying to leverage it to get the NFLPA or the NFL involved.
Yeah, his name is Tom Dundon, who sunk a shocking $250 million into the AAF to keep it alive. I mean, stunning. The thing is almost dead. And the issue is, it's not even that complicated. In fact, I understand what his frustration is with the NFLPA because we're talking about practice squad players, Troy. We're talking practice squad. We're not talking like...
We're talking about practice.
Squad.
Not a game.
No.
Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Squad. We're not talking about Paxton Lynch developing. We're talking about whoever the heck's on the practice squad. And the NFLPA doesn't even want to let those guys participate because they fear it's going to violate their negotiations about feeling forced to play. Okay. So what exactly are you supposed to do? You just drafted Clayton Thorson with your fourth round pick. Now what? Seriously, now what?
Gets minimal reps in camp. Does nothing during the season.
Right.
Other than watch and play scout team. That's where the idea of practice squad players playing in the AAF would benefit them, especially at those skill positions.
I mean, and for what? Under the hope that, where are we even going here? In my mind, Joe Flacco's the quarterback, Troy, for the next 3 years, period. If Joe Flacco, think about this for a second. If he's not your quarterback, Troy, for the next 3 years, what does that say?
Then you're on your sixth starting quarterback since Peyton Manning.
Come on.
The lack of stability at that position has to end. I mean, it's just that simple. Every NFL team that stinks has lack of stability at quarterback. With the exception maybe of the New York Giants the last three, 4 years.
Dude, this is it. John Elway's in his early 60s. He's got 3 years left on his deal. Joe Ellis has 3 years left on his deal. Brittany Bolin is going to start working in the front office doing something somehow by the end of the year. The CBA is up in 2020, meaning 2021. Most likely we'll have at this time of year, there'll be a lockout, right? We've gone through it before. We'll be there again. And that's it. And what happens with this Denver Broncos team in 2021 is anybody's guess. But I'm going to guess it's a pretty large overhaul, Troy. I mean, it's shaping up to be a pretty large overhaul. So you think you're getting a backup quarterback for what? Clayton Thorson the third? He's out there with Marianne and Ginger?
And the minnow?
That's right. The professor's trying to figure out how to get him off the island? Worst professor ever, by the way.
Trying to get him off the bench.
I mean, how far away could they be on a three-island tour? What island exists that's off the nautical maps on a three-island tour? Where'd they go?
The same place they had the fire festival, the music festival. It was right in the parking lot of a Sandals resort.
Well, I mean, at least you knew where those, you know, those rich spoiled brats were. What a great documentary, by the way, if you want to see something. So we needed water. So I was willing to, wow, okay, slow down. Now, I don't understand the point of it. Get starters, the end. After that, I wouldn't even waste time with a quarterback because who's really going to develop better than Kevin Hogan? A dude that you got for $1 million and is fine, right? He's actually played in the NFL. And if Joe Flacco actually gets hurt, there's no plan B here.
Not if you're not taking one at 10 or 15.
Right. Now, that would be something, wouldn't it?
After all this, they take a quarterback at 15.
I mean, I kind of hope it happens.
It'd be fascinating because it would be in juxtaposition to the rest of their offseason so far.
It would be so opposed to what they've done. So I cannot discount it. I mean, this is an organization who decided to draft a player, their most important player, without really sitting down and chatting with them. Seems like a great guy. But good luck getting a job where you don't interview with the company. Who here has ever gotten a job like that? Troy, you ever been hired and nobody's ever talked to you? It's preposterous.
No, I have not.
I mean, like, it's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
They just see the avatar and say, you're in. I'm in for what? You leave me out of this, Neil.
It's not like it's a sixth or seventh rounder practice squad guy. You know what I mean? It's not like that. It's you're it.
Based on all the makeup of Bradley Chubb, his family, his background, I'm sure they literally made two calls and said, this guy has no red flags. There aren't any that I know of.
It's okay.
But it is odd.
It's so bizarre, but fine. So the only thing that proved is the Broncos are willing to do anything. So under that banner, by the way, maybe it is Drew Lock. Now, Troy, I wouldn't be against it whatsoever. I mean, it would absolutely, positively be everything I was talking about last year. It would be absolutely what I was advocating for last year. Use your position in the top 15, in the case of the Broncos last year, top five. You still don't have a quarterback, by the way. You got Joe Flacco, more or less under a one-year deal. Can you explain the terms of his contract if people don't quite understand it?
Well, it's 3 years at roughly $63 million, or right at that. I mean, I can look it up. But the reality is this. Only this season is guaranteed. The Broncos, as they could with Keenum, I mean, they're dating, not married here. They could walk away from Flacco with minimal hit and move on after one season. They didn't acquire him as a bridge so far. Now, again, that changes if they get a quarterback at 10. They go 8-8 or 7-9, and they drafted a quarterback at 10, then it's likely Joe Flacco is done after 1 year.
Yep.
But the one part about this, and give the Broncos credit, because they get ripped on the quarterback thing, and understandably so, Flacco's salary, $18, $19 million a year, is like 17th, 18th in the league. No,
and what they're really doing this year is paying 22 because they're covering $4 million from Case Keenum.
Right, but even that, they're not even in the top 15 in salary.
This is what you pay.
Right, this is the going rate.
This is it.
For a mid-level quarterback.
Mid-level.
Right, so the money thing, when people say that, I'm like, well, what are you going to get him for? He's played in the league and he's won games. He's going to cost you minimum $15 million. In his case, it's a little more, but you're not paying him $27 million. Like, Derek Carr's getting paid. That's when it hurts, when you start making $22, $25 million and you're an average quarterback, because now your roster's compromised.
Yeah, and the whole, Glennon Trubisky doctrine, part of it is based that you have a budget for the quarterback room. So it is not a big deal if you're paying Mike Glennon or Josh McCown, who made $10 million last year. Josh McCown made $10 million to be a backup to Sam Darnold. But it's not a big deal if the rest of your budget, Troy, fits. Who cares? Because in a salary cap, you should expect to pay a certain amount for that quarterback room. So right now, the Broncos are into it for $23 million. And Garrett Grayson is, I don't know what they do with Garrett Grayson, whether he stays or goes. So on one hand, drafting a quarterback actually, again, makes a lot of sense. I'm not talking like John Elway is running things, Troy. I'm just talking like, just take John Elway out of the equation and just say, we are an NFL team. How do we go about things? Most organizations that aren't operating in a small three-year window, Troy, there's no doubt they would draft a quarterback this year at 10. Because most teams would realize we're more rebuilding than winning now, right? Because we're all, listen, man, I know the attitude is win now. There's no doubt it's win now. But the reality of the situation is the Broncos are still a rebuilding team. So in this particular scenario, it screams to draft a quarterback. Not only does it scream to draft a quarterback, it screams to move up to get whoever the best quarterback actually is.
But not if that quarterback, they've said the top quarterback in this class would have been sixth last year. So do you still move up?
Then it feels like you think Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins would have been sixth? Do you think that?
Do I? No. I think they would have been ahead of Lamar Jackson, but not anyone else.
Right.
Necessarily. I mean, again, their college career.
You can throw out Kyler Murray. Because when you draft Kyler Murray, you have to change so much to have first of all, you have to have a coach who's a college coach.
Yeah, skilled in the college red offense.
You have to hire a college coach who has significant personnel influence. Well, the Broncos are never, ever, ever going to do that. So to me, Kyler Murray, the fact that they're ever even having him in here to me is kind of a joke. But Dwayne Haskins?
He's interesting.
Dude.
If he falls to 10, if the Giants, the Giants, I don't know what is going on with them and Eli Manning. Like, Gettleman, every time he talks, for all of the weirdness that's happened in Denver the last few years, what is going on in New York with Eli Manning?
Well, it's gotten more confusing, especially because they have the 17th pick, too. So they can do a bunch of different things. This love for Eli Manning makes no sense to me.
I can't believe
they didn't cut him.
Nobody can, other than their GM. He's like, he's a great quarterback still. It's like, what are you watching?
I don't know.
You just blame Beckham? Okay, so Beckham's the problem. You have a quarterback who's going to be almost 40.
It's stunning.
But if they pass on Haskins, then he could be there at 10. And he's an interesting guy because he's a big guy, big arm. He fits the profile that John Elway has shown he likes. I think he's only 6'4", but he's big. And Stephen A. Smith, with all apologies, he's not a running quarterback.
That's right, Stephen
A. He almost never runs.
Watch a game.
And he has got an absolute bazooka on his right shoulder.
If Dwayne Haskins was playing quarterback for the Lakers, Stephen A. Smith would be all about it.
But the problem with Haskins, and I talked to Mark Sanchez about this when he came here, those guys that only started 1 year in college, there's not a lot of success stories in the NFL of guys who only started 1 year in college.
It's a red flag. No doubt about it.
It doesn't mean you can't overcome it, but man, if he's on the board at 10.
It sets up perfect to have Flacco, just like Mahomes under Alex Smith, and segue in that direction. However, what doesn't make sense is that Elway would have done everything else for this to happen, which means it could happen.
Yeah, John Elway is a lot of things, and he was brilliant as a player, and he won a Super Bowl as an executive. He is unpredictable as a GM.
The most logical thing to do here at 10 is basically stay at 10 and take the best quarterback available.
No.
No. It does.
Not from this year.
No. Hold on. From an overall football perspective, based on everything else, we are really rebuilding. We really aren't a playoff team. We have a quarterback who fits a budget. It's time to put some that doesn't have more guaranteed money than this year And we have a quarterback, especially like Haskins and maybe Drew Lock, that more or less fits who we want and who we are. Like, you don't have to change your entire offense for these guys. They would both probably be pretty good in a West Coast type of offense, and you would give them a year to learn the language, settle in, because you're really not worried about the playoffs. That's what we have as a team, but that's not what how we're operating. We're operating as if we're on the precipice of making the Super Bowl.
Or at least the playoffs.
Playoffs?
That's been the issue. They're a team in transition that's playing year by year. When you're a team in transition, you have to play with a longer view.
What is hysterical is, of course, the argument here is John Elway's the Super Bowl. What? It's John Elway's Super Bowl. And I was like, well, build the statue. I love a statue. Good statue would be perfect. What you really have in a league where Emmanuel Sanders, who is a bubble player, I'm not ripping on Emmanuel, my new BFF, but he is owed $8.5 million, something like that. He's coming off an Achilles, and there are veteran cuts every year. I will never forget. TJ Ward coming off the field, and there's his best friend, Troy Rank. TJ, you got any comments about the rumors? What?
Yeah, he was mad. Really, really mad. He had no idea. He was blindsided. I felt badly because his agent should have told him.
You were there for him. You were there.
I'm like,
it was a story. It had to be asked.
No, I still get along. I text him even to this day. I'm like,
oh, it certainly wasn't your fault.
Yeah, I'm like, DJ, there's a chance you're going to be gone here. And he was like, what?
Not only was it not your fault, you were completely correct. But that was a rumor that was everybody kind of knew it because it had been circulating during the practice itself. But what we didn't know behind the scenes is that Vance Joseph, in his infinite wisdom, had more or less told TJ that don't pay attention to any of that. Because Vance Joseph was one of the worst head coaches of all time and didn't know how to manage anything. He was really bad in that department. He didn't communicate great with Elway. He didn't know how to communicate with the players. He wanted to be their best friend instead of being somebody who was more honest and truthful that players would respect. VJ was just so ill-prepared for that job, Troy. Whew. I would like to think, like, Fangio, in that same sort of circumstance, may have a more measured approach to how he deals with players. Maybe like, hey, maybe we should talk a little bit, or maybe we should get together, or, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on, or be honest. How about that? Yeah, this could be happening.
Yeah, Vic doesn't strike me as a guy who talks in nuances. It's like, hey, we may be cutting you, just so you know.
Yeah.
It could go either way, but if you get cut, don't be surprised. If you make the team, don't be surprised.
So,
Vic is much older than VJ in that regard, and he's at a point where he never thought he'd be a head coach. He's not interested in making friends. He's not interested in that. Vance was a great assistant coach, and I saw this with Clint Hurdle initially as a manager. As an assistant coach, you're the shoulder to cry on. You're the guy they go to the vent, and you're that guy. When you become the head coach, it has to be a separation of church and state.
Right.
Because they have to know you'll bench him. They have to know you'll cut him.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I always admired Gary Kubiak. They love the guy, but there was a line clearly none of them would cross. Right. And I go back to a story when a couple guys were throwing the ball around toward a press conference. Both guys ended up getting cut. Good guys. They're throwing the linemen. They throw a ball at a goalpost.
Yes.
And Gary, we're getting ready to start a press conference, and he just like, hold on, guys, to the media. Would you two stop that right now, like a dad? And they're like, okay, coach, you grab the ball and run off.
I'll never forget it.
With him.
It was more kind of like, hey, y'all, hold on.
Hold on, y'all.
Hey, you gotta do that somewhere else there. It was one of them was the blonde hair offensive lineman guy.
Dylan Day
was one of them.
And the other guy, I can see him. His locker was in the corner, a defensive lineman.
It was kind of like stern and loud enough to make a point. And they're like, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
No, sir.
We'll get the ball, and we're going to be going to the locker room. Yeah.
All right, fellas. And we all started laughing.
But that's what I asked people behind the scenes. They're like, yeah, we all love Gary. We run through a wall for him, but there was a line you couldn't cross.
Yeah, and VJ, there was...
He got a little better last year, but like you said, he's a coordinator for 1 year.
Yep.
He wasn't ready yet. For whatever reason, he wasn't ready.
No.
And he wasn't ready to walk into this, what was a mess that year.
A mess. So when you talk about the quarterback situation, for example, and you know what? Hold on. Let me just go to Sebastian because he's on it. Sebastian, you're on the fan. What's up, buddy?
Hi, gentlemen.
Yeah, what's up?
I wanted to call in and rein in on the whole quarterback ranking in the division. As a Chargers fan that lives in Denver, I get a good view of both. And I was just calling to say that, you know, as I watch Phillip Rivers, it really comes down to what shape this guy's offensive line is December. And as his offensive line breaks down, he starts seeing ghosts in the pocket. And if you saw, like, later on down the stretch in the season, even against the Ravens game that we won, he wasn't really that effective. And I just really think it comes down at the end of the day is what offensive line are the Broncos putting in front of Joe Flacco and can the weapons that he has sustain it later on in the season.
Well, Sebastian, this is Troy Rick from Denver 7. Quick question, as a Chargers fan here in Denver, what do you think, what does Phillip Rivers have left next season? You would see him all the time. I see him, you know, chunks, but two games in person. He had a 32-12 last year. What is a realistic expectation as a Chargers fan of Phillip Rivers next season?
I would honestly say probably about 30 touchdowns, maybe like 14 interceptions. The big wild card for me is Melvin Gordon. Is this guy staying healthy? Is he catching a lot of short swing passes? Our offense, like, completely shut down late in the season when Melvin Gordon got hurt on an absolutely useless reverse play. That game where Phillip completed all those passes.
All right, well, I appreciate it, but we're not here to break down the Chargers.
Well, listen, appreciate what Sebastian that. Just said, though, if Rivers throws for 30 and 14, do you think Flacco's going to be better than that? He hasn't been since 2014.
Think about that for a second.
If Rivers is 30 and 14, Flacco needs to be like 28 and 13, like right around there. Maybe a few less touchdowns.
What kind of offense what are we talking about here, Troy? What are we averaging a game?
They've got to
what
average,
do you think?
They've got to average 23 to 24. Right.
So
no
we're
chance.
Averaging 23 a game. So we're scoring at least two touchdowns, maybe three. Two of those three touchdown passes most days?
Yeah. I mean,
so we're talking 30 to 32 touchdowns.
Yeah, I just think it won't. I don't think it'll be that high. They're going to be more like 26.
Now you talk about the interceptions. So let's just sort of say, hey, it's pretty fair to say we'll be between 26 and 32 touchdown passes, right?
That's fair.
Okay. 32 high side, 26 low side.
It's not going to be 32, but continue.
I said high side.
You said wrong, but go.
What are the interceptions? What is Joe Flacco in terms of how he takes care of the football?
He's been closer to 1-1 the last couple of years. That's my problem.
Yeah, is that where we're going here? Really? Is that the offense that we're going to design? Is that what he's going to be operating under?
I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Keenum was 18-15 after being 22-7 with the Vikings.
How's the offensive line going to be?
It's a huge... There's more questions than the episode of Jeopardy. We don't know who the center is. Or is McGovern ready? I don't know that. Who's your guard? Is that Wilkinson? Is Bowles going to figure it out?
Who are we throwing to?
Emmanuel Sanders is making the team if he's healthy. It's not even a question.
Okay.
And Cortland Sutton's got to learn to get off press coverage and become a consistent threat.
Why do you think the Emmanuel Sanders is such a slam dunk?
They don't have another deep threat.
Right now they don't.
Where are they going to get that deep threat?
N'Keal Harry? DK Metcalf?
DK Metcalf is a workout hero. Did you watch him at Ole Miss?
Yeah, I did.
He was not an impactful player at Ole Miss consistently.
They had a terrible quarterback.
Stop.
And a lousy offensive coordinator.
You sound like a little league parent. When my kid comes up, the sun's right in his left eye. I'm telling you. It hits him in the eye. I'm not a Metcalf guy. He's a workout guy for me. I watched enough Ole Miss.
I'm not a big Metcalf. I've moved on to N'Keal Harry,
Clatt
by the way.
Yeah, forced you to move off of Metcalf.
I listen to things.
I hear things, okay? I'm around places.
The concept, though, I would stick with. Like, I think drafting a dynamic pass catcher has to be a huge priority. And I've really, you know, I always liked N'Keal Harry. I've actually loved him, but I just felt like if I'm just advocating for a kid because I've just watched him so much because that's where my son goes to school, that's a little weak. So let me open up my mind. And I open it to Metcalf, and I still think he's going to be a dynamic player. I know that he's going to be taken in the first round. He's going in the first round. But I can also acknowledge some of the deficiencies. So when I look at a guy like N'Keal Harry, I see Demaryius Thomas all over again. We had Herm Edwards on. He disagreed with that. He thought, N'Keal Harry is Dez Bryant. So if you can get a guy like Dez Bryant on, Troy, I think that's pretty strong.
Would you take him, but knowing what you know about this offense, we've never seen Rich Gangarella call plays, but it's off of the Kyle Shanahan chant. Would you rather have N'Keal Harry or TJ Hockenson in this offense?
We'll get to it next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Troy, ask me that question again. C-Mac with Troy Rang. Go ahead, hit me with it. Just ask me the question.
C-Mac doesn't want to watch me dance.
Who exactly does want to watch you dance, Troy?
Nobody. Before we went to break, we were discussing the idea they needed impact player offensively. D-Mac brought up N'Keal Harry, his guy from Arizona State, whom Herb Edwards compared favorably, apparently, to Dez Bryant.
Yep.
And I asked him, based on what we know about the Shanahan offense, and we don't know what Rich Scangarello is going to look like as a play caller. He's never done it at the professional level. But what we know about the Shanahan offense, would you rather have N'Keal Harry, maybe even at 15 or 17, mm-hmm. or TJ Hockenson at 10, yeah. based on what we know of the Shanahan
and
offense?
And by the way, that's exactly what it would be. It would be moving back a few spots for Harry, not taking Harry at 10. Because... So that's kind of tricky. So I'm because I don't think I would actually draft a N'Keal Harry at 10.
I would not. Not a receiver at 10.
If you're going to stay at 10, it's got to be some sort of dynamic...
linebacker?
Impact player, because if you move back at 15, yes. Because if you move back to 15, you give yourself a possibility to move back up. So if you're just going to stay there at 10, you're more or less telling everybody, we're not going to get Garrett Bradbury. We're not going to move back up for that starting center. Okay, so it's a tricky question, because, but you may be able to get Harry. See, that's the tricky part. You may be able to get Harry in the second round. Harry's he's a coin flip sort of guy in these mocks. In fact, I'd say he's a coin flip where the head side is way heavier than the tail side, meaning that most of the times he is actually in the second round, not in the first round.
Are there any mocks you've found that have him in front of Metcalf?
No.
Okay.
Zero.
I like Harry better than Metcalf.
I do too. But none. I've not seen one that has him in front. Marquise Brown is interesting as a receiver.
He's from Oklahoma.
That's right. He kind of pops up all over the place. And Parrish, I'm forgetting his name, he's another receiver that kind of is in the mix as well. But it's a good question. Would I rather have Hockenson than Harry?
Based on what we know of the Shanahan offense, that's the context here.
Well, before I answer your very good question, let me ask you another question. Where are we with Jake Butt? Where do we think Jake Butt's going
to
be?
I talked to Jake 10 days ago.
I know. You had an incredible assignment.
Yeah, Broncos cheerleader auditions.
Yeah.
They pared down to 26. Only a few rookies. I didn't realize how hard it is to make that team.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard my philosophy. I say take the top 100 and just put a names in the hat and pick them out, and that'd be just fine. But go ahead.
Well, in the case of Jake Butt, at college, he was great, but he's had three ACL surgeries now, and he admits to me, hey, they're all different. He feels like this one's going a little better than some of the others had, so he certainly has a frame of reference, but he's 5 months out, D-Mac. I mean, he didn't miss all of last season. That injury occurred after the Ravens game at practice, so he had played at that point, three games?
Mm-hmm.
So he still has roughly 5 months of recovery time. So April, May, June, July, August... Is he going to be ready in September?
You know, so you're not...
I like Jake Butt, but I don't know that he's even going to be ready and cleared for the opener.
Okay.
And he's probably not going to be cleared at any time during training camp, would be my guess, if they take a conservative approach. So you have to draft a tight end is what I'm getting at. You can't trust Jeff Heuermann and Jake Butt just because of injury. I like Jake Butt's chances of being a good player in the NFL if he can be available.
Have you seen the tall kid from San Diego State? It's like 6'6".
Yeah,
Name's escape. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I like the kid from Texas
A&M. Was it Khalil? Khalil, something like that?
Yeah, Khalil. I know who you're talking about. I like the kid from Texas A&M, and I like Noah Fant, the other Iowa
Fant's
tight end.
Another first-round guy, though.
I don't think he is. He's on the bubble, I would think.
He gets a lot of...
He's had some issues.
He gets a lot of props in the first round, that's for sure.
I heard there might have been some issues maybe off the field that maybe scouts have to take a look at.
Anyways, my point with Khalil, for example, Kelsey was drafted in the third round. This kid out of San Diego State, he's one of these typical, you know, basketball-looking football player guys. You know, 6'6", huge wingspan, all this sort of stuff. So to me, again, I think some of these... especially in the Big Ten and some of the college football stuff, Troy, feels wide open, man. Like, if you go back and look at Fan and Hockenson tape, and those were their two primary receivers, by the way, at Iowa, it is ridiculous how often they are catching footballs when there is so much space.
Nobody around them.
Doesn't that kind of blow you away? Like, how is this happening over and over and over again?
I would say that, except I watch college football and nobody guards anybody, especially...
Right. So it's a little bit of fool... It could be a little bit of fool's gold. You cannot... There's way more coverage of a DK Metcalf or N'Keal Harry in college football. I mean, you're up on the cornerbacks.
Nobody plays press. They play 10 steps off and play zone.
Against N'Keal Harry, they play plenty of press. You might be right about DK Metcalf because he runs in a straight line.
Yeah.
So they back off of him.
Right.
Watch N'Keal Harry a little bit more. Tons of screens. Tons of tight coverage. All sorts of stuff like that. And he's a punt returner. How about that, by the way?
Yeah, they could use a dynamic punt returner.
N'Keal Harry, watch. You want to watch it highlight? Watch N'Keal Harry take a punt back against USC. Go take a peek at that. So if you're asking me who I like, Hockenson or Harry, I would say Harry. Because I think you can find a tight end that would suit your needs a little bit deeper. I think Hockenson is a little bit of fool's gold. I think Jake Butt fills that need better and will be here for a longer period of time anyway. I think Emmanuel Sanders probably will make the team as long as he's healthy, but he does have some red flags as a possible vet cut. It's there. So I would take N'Keal Harry, but I take it thinking in order to get him, you're moving back, and you're moving back up for Garrett Bradbury. So I do take it with some conditions. But it could be exciting. If you just draft Ed Oliver or Devin Bush, you know, they better be superstars at 10. They better be freaking superstars, okay? Because you're probably giving up two players for one, just like they did last year for Bradley Chubb. Bradley Chubb better be a superstar.
He's on his way.
Okay. All right. Cool. Because you did give up forever two potential starters for that one guy.
It is interesting with their draft history in the first round with Elway, because every time he goes defense, they almost always hit on their first round picks. Even Roby had a decent career here, especially when he was cast just as a nickelback. But anytime they go offense, it's been an issue, whether it's Paxton or now Garrett Bowles. But they absolutely desperately need offensive players. They need to caffeinate their offense. They averaged 18 points 2 years ago. We thought this year, okay, Musgrave, he's in charge. They got Keenum. They averaged 20.
Yeah, the Musgrave thing to me was like nothing. If I look at a guy's resume, first of all, I would interview people before I'd hire them. Call me nuts. The second thing I would do is look at a guy's resume. And if your mailing address just gets sent to U-Haul, then you may want to stay away from how great this guy is going to be. Look at Bill Musgrave's resume. Look at it. 2 years here, 1 year here, 3 years here, 2 years here. It's not like there's been some sort of incredible track. Oh, he was incredible with Derek Carr in Oakland. Nah, not really. He was all right. It wasn't spectacular. The thing Billy Moose had going for him was he probably was the greatest athlete ever out of Grand Junction. Build a statue.
What's your deal with statues? You got like a...
Because
did you invest in a statue company?
I hate the whole concept of... you know, looking at everybody, their career in total, rather what they bring to the table right now, Troy. Okay? I think that the argument, well, Elway won a Super Bowl with the Broncos, to me, is so preposterous. If you want to just say, hey, he's really good for these reasons, tell me what these reasons are. But just to say he's great now because he won a Super Bowl then, to me, is first of all, if I'm John Elway, I'm insulted by that. I think John Elway wants to be regarded on his current merits. I think John's a competitive guy. I don't think he's backing away from anything. I think he's got guts. He's strong. He's a football guy. All that sort of stuff. So why would John Elway want you to make excuses for him? He doesn't. I'll give Elway plenty of credit on that. He does not sit there and make excuses for what's been happening. In fact, just the opposite. He owns it. He's owned it every single time he's been asked about it, and I give him credit for that. He does not. John Elway has never said anything that could be interpreted, I won you a Super Bowl, give me a break.
Yeah, this isn't my fault. I won you. It's on these players. It's not me.
Listeners and fans say it all the time. He never says it. So props to him on that. Yeah, I think John would want to be evaluated with how things are happening right now. And right now, they're coming off 6-10. Over the past 2 years, they're coming off 11-21. I think he likes that challenge. If he didn't like that challenge, he'd just quit.
Right, exactly. Why would he keep doing this?
Why would he keep doing
it? I asked him that direct question at the combine. I said, John, given the fact everything you've done as a player, as an executive, you've been to a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl. I said, you know, with all due respect, why do this job? And he said, I'll tell you after the break.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
We're watching the Rockies. And no score after three, I think. Three, maybe. Charlie Blackmon hits a bomb to right field. And off the bat, both me and Troy are like, oh! It just, like, just curls foul by 10, 15 feet, something like that. I mean, he just crushed it.
A tank to right field, just outside of the foul pole.
And then it's like, ah. And sure enough, what happens on the next pitch?
Next pitch, jam shot to the pitcher, double play in 1-6-3. That's so baseball. He just absolutely obliterated an off-speed pitch about 400 feet. Next pitch gets jammed into a double play.
By the way, the Rockies had something. I actually have never seen on a drop third strike. Oh, geez, was it Hampson? I'm not sure who's hitting. Nine.
No, it was a bunt, wasn't it? Well, either way, it was a bunt or a drop third. It was Hampson.
No, it was a bunt. You're right. It was a bunt. And the ball gets thrown down and dropped by the second baseman covering.
No, it hit him. It hit Hampson.
Oh, it did?
Yes. He's running down first.
All right, so hold on a second. What if the second baseman just dropped the ball? Would he have been okay? Because what the umpires did is they said Hampson was inside of the runner's lane and that he's out. And it looks like they got that call right. But what if that ball was like just dropped by what if it was a drop third strike and the ball went down there and the ball was dropped?
It depends.
And it didn't hit him.
Well, it depends on where he is on that runner's lane. As a runner, you have to go inside. You have the right side. That's where that, when you see in the chalk, about halfway up, it has that chalk square. As a runner, that's your lane. So the person throwing it from the catcher or whatever has a place to throw. Otherwise, you would run right over the top of the bag, and there's nowhere for them to throw.
Okay, so
To answer your question, if he threw it down there and he dropped it and he stayed in his lane, then it's an error. Reaches.
Yeah, but what if he wasn't in his lane? What if he was on the outside and the guy, second baseman, drops the ball?
It's just a
It doesn't hit him at all.
Right, it's a subjective call. It's an easier call if it hits the runner. There's been guys go crazy and debate like, hey, I couldn't catch it because the runner was in my line. That becomes a subjective call on the umpire. Does he think he was in the line? I've seen it called both ways where, hey, he didn't interfere, he stayed in his line or he was right on the line. In the case of Hampson, they called it by letter of the law. Usually it's obvious. The guy's like 3 feet in, almost on the grass, running at the first baseman or the guy's covering. So it's an easier call. Hampson was right on the line. Like, that call could have gone either way. They said he was not far enough over to the right. He's out.
All right. Going into the break, go ahead. What were you going to reveal?
John Elway, I was talking to him at the combine. We were talking to this prior to the break. This is Troy Rink from Denver 7 here with my guy, D-Mac. At the combine, I asked John Elway the question. You've won Super Bowls as a player. You're a Hall of Famer. You've gone to the Super Bowl as an executive, and you've won a Super Bowl executive. At this point, what drives you? Why can I literally looked at him.
Why do you do it?
Why do you do it? Why do you keep working?
Why do you keep doing it?
And he said, I want to win, and I want to fix this. To your point. He said, I want to win. I want to fix this. I'm competitive. I want to win. And that's who he is in off seasons. This is his time. This is his two-minute drill.
Oh, no doubt about it.
And that's why when everyone says, well, they're rebuilding, and they John Elway's, that's not who he is. I'm not saying you can't do that, but honestly, if you were going to do that, it would be under a different executive. Elway doesn't do that. So his answer was simple. I want to win. I want to fix this. I want to get this right. And they've had a good offseason.
We have huge hockey down at the Pepsi Center tonight. Virtual playoff action with the Avs having a 1-point lead over the Coyotes.
dare I say, desperate hockey?
No, I'm sorry, not down the pen. What am I talking about?
They're on the road.
They're on the road. Sorry.
Dare I say desperate.
Playing against the Blues, 1-point lead over the Coyotes. Then the Nuggets go on the road against the Warriors. So all sorts of cool stuff. Troy back with us tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Strawberry Man. Appreciate it.
Thank
Rockies,
you.
You're welcome. No score. Let's go, Rocks. Get it together against Tampa. Drive Reloaded comes up next.